Where is thought located? Where is thought located? That's a question that a lot of people have asked, and no one has come up with an answer that satisfies them. And you think you're going to come up with one from me tonight, huh? Well, let's see. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. The Absolute Philosopher can just ramble on and anything that comes to mind, and sometimes that's very surprising. At the University of Chicago in graduate school there, School of Religion and so forth, we had the opportunity to meet with a lot of professors in the evenings and discuss philosophical thoughts. Now, the professors were quite excellent. They were well-known people throughout the educational field. They were outstanding people, and I have mentioned their names before, and Adler and Hutchins and so forth. Now, these guys were good thinkers, and they had a few select students come and have dinner with them, and after dinner have a cigar and or pipe and glass of cognac or something, and sit and discuss philosophy. It wasn't a drunken ball or something like that. It was just a really intense discussion. Now, I never considered myself to be a top student, or one who was a straight A type student, and to my delight and surprise, none of the top A students were invited to these meetings. The professors were saying, we want people who think for themselves. And when you think for yourself, you don't always answer the things the way the professor wants you to answer them. You don't always give them the answer that they want, and so they don't give you the best grade. But we talked about many topics, and one of them certainly was, where is thought located? If you're to be an independent thinker, where is your thought located? How do you connect with it? How do you find it in the morass of education and in the morass of your mind and thinking and everyday demands upon you? And these top educators and, in large measure, philosophers, they kept tugging at each one of us and giving us contrary opinions, which we knew intellectually they did not believe in, but which irritated us, because they were trying to cause us to lose our grip and to lose our place, to see how philosophically sound we really were, if we were sound, and if we had any type of a philosophical direction to our thinking at all. And when we talked about thought, when we talked about the mind, when we talked about knowledge, there was always the idea that knowledge is in books and knowledge is in the minds of the great schools. And when the Alexandrian Library burned historically, that was a great loss to the world because it was a loss of knowledge. And one of the professors said, I think it was wonderful that the library burned. And we all looked at him thinking, how sacrilegious, how terrible that you would approve of a library. But I didn't say you should burn it. I just said, I think it was wonderful that it burned, in afterthought. Because if we were relying upon all that knowledge and all that wisdom, we would have never struck out on new frontiers, never struck out on new levels of awareness. Because many of the early thinkers, the early philosophers, and that's what the early philosophers were, they were thinkers. Many of the early mathematicians, many of the astronomers, many of the people who studied the stars and studied the way the earth revolved and the way the sun, moon, and planets revolved, and many of these people, they had had previous people before them who looked up in the sky and saw things and didn't see things because they didn't have a telescope. They could only use their naked eye. And so then mythology entered in very strongly. And they said that the various constellations, the various formations of stars in the sky, were certain Roman gods and people of great stature throughout all time. And that's very wonderful. It's very wonderful. However, it's just mythology. It's just fiction, but a pleasant fiction. And today, we still have that fiction. We still call these things Orion's Belt and the Milky Way, and we call it the North Star, and we call it the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper and many other things. We call them these things because those are our happy terms that we've learned it by. But in the process, learning stopped, and accepting things as they were, or as we were told that they were, put the kibosh on any future understanding. But a wonderful thing took place, and it always is wonderful when it takes place like this. There were these ignorant, terribly, terribly ignorant, stupid, uneducated, illiterate, sounds interesting, doesn't it? Boys who herded sheep on the desert. And they had to be alert at night as well as during the day, because the wolves and animals that would take down their sheep were all around. And so they sat there and they sang, and they had to keep awake doing something, so they counted the stars, or they looked up there, and then they couldn't help but notice how the earth rotated. They couldn't help but notice how the Big Dipper changed locations. It sort of arced around the North Star. And sometimes it was below the horizon, sometimes it was above the horizon. And in the Southern Hemisphere, they had a whole different series of star forms. You would think that they would be as visible in the north as they were in the south, but that is not necessarily true. And so the boys studied these things. And they listened to a voice within themselves that said, you can understand that. You can understand what these stars mean and why they're there and what our relationship is to them. And you can visit them if you want. Wow! Can you imagine a shepherd boy who's sitting all night on the cold fronts of whatever country he's in and being told by a voice within him he can visit a star, he can visit a galaxy, he can visit a universe? Well, he believes it. Because you see, the divine in him and he were inseparable. They were one. They were aware of each other. They were in tune with each other. And so he realized that the divine in him, that's the universal oneness, the allness of knowledge, it was aware in him, and so he listened to that. And where does thought come from? Where is thought located? Well, there's not a place in us where it's located. Many of the astrologers try to tell you that the heart is located, the love center, the mind is located, the soul, or whatever, you know. And they all try to say the parts of the body do this, which is a charming thing to say, because when the body ceases to function, the heart ceases to pump. And so then when the heart ceases to pump, the body is dead, they say, you know. So they had certain natural opinions that these thoughts carried out in their life. Well, now the shepherd boys were probably some of the most brilliant, astute beings ever to live on the face of the earth. But they had another advantage that was even greater, which made them even more magnificent. And that advantage was they were illiterate. They could not write about it. They could not talk about it, because who would believe them? They're just illiterate shepherd boys, you know. But they knew. Now, they knew the great wisdom of the universe. They knew all these things, and they had no pride, no ego in them saying they must go and teach the world how to sing. They must go and do these things. Very, very few, if any, did that. Oh, some may have grown up and were sent to school by their tribal chiefs or by their parents or whomever, and some may have gone on to greatness, but believe me, those who left and went on to school forgot what they learned in their shepherd fields. They forgot their oneness with universal knowledge of the divine within them, and they went to book learning, which was the outer, and they memorized the outer things, and they learned the outer things, and they took stock in the outer things, and the outer things seemed quite obvious. And so their thought stopped. They stopped thinking, and they just became rote members of the intellectual society. They just learned it by memory. And you see, when we can be harmoniously in tune with the divine within us, when we can be harmoniously in tune with all that is within us, the oneness of the universe that is within us, then we have the brilliance of all there is. The shepherd boy David, remember him? Mm-hmm. And what did he do? He slew the giant. But he believed in his king. And when his king was facing humility before this Philistine giant, the shepherd boy was called. And the shepherd boy stood there naked in front of this giant with all his war swords and weapons, whatever they were that he had, shield and everything else like that. And this naked shepherd boy with just his sheepskin on, so to speak, in front of this giant, who was a man maybe quite tall, maybe even 8, maybe 9 feet tall. Of course, the Bible likes to paint him as 20 feet tall or 15 feet tall, some outrageous thing, but he was a giant. He was big and powerful and well-built, and he was the leader of his army. If not the leader of it, he was a very powerful. He was the bomb. And so David stopped and looked at the giant, and he said to himself, there must be a way. And when David was in the fields, and a wolf would come along to take one of his sheep, he let the wolf get very close to him, even to the point of getting close to the sheep and starting to take the sheep. And when the wolf was close enough, David took aim at the wolf's forehead, right between the eyes, and he hit that wolf with his stone with all the force he had and knocked it senseless. He may have even killed it, but you can be sure that that wolf changed his mind about going after that boy's sheep. And if he killed it, which he could do too, because he could go over to this senseless animal and he could dispatch him, but that was not his purpose. He wanted to protect his sheep. He didn't want to kill the wolves. And so he built around himself such a marvelous field of love and joy and peace. So when he was called upon to face the Philistine giant, he stopped to think, listening to the divine within him, and the divine within him said, how did you dispatch the wolves? And so, in just a moment, before the giant Goliath had a chance to realize this kid was pretty sharp, the giant Goliath stood there, held back his shield, held back everything, said, shoot me, boy, have at me. And the one stone, which could not have been larger than his hand, it was probably small as a golf ball, maybe, And he took that stone and flung it at the giant's forehead and struck him right between the eyes. and not only knocked him senseless, but killed him. Now, this poor shepherd boy had not had the training in running an army. He had not had the training in running a country. He had not had the training in doing anything, but he listened within. And in his listening within, great magic was brought forth from his being. And like Daniel in the lion's den, he listened within. He had no fear of the outer world. He had experienced that in his lifetime, as he too was a shepherd, as he too lived with his flocks. And he was never afraid of anything, because he loved everything. And he would surround himself with this pure white light of love, and all that was contrary would be away. Yes, the question you ask here, where is thought located? Thought is located in the divine. Thought is located in the universal mind, which is what we are. And as we are aware of this, as we tune into our universal mind, as we learn to meditate, as we learn to listen, as we learn to follow the guidance from within, we're the master. And you think I am very tough on you when I tell you, don't miss your meditation time. Don't miss your introspection time. Don't do anything else during that time except tune in to the divine in you. Tune in to your reality. And make a real good contact with your own inner self, because then everything you do in life will be a fabulous adventure. But if you don't tune in, you can be in this monastery all of the days of your life, and you'll merely be as unhappy as a mouse in a box who cannot get out and express himself. But if you forget that you're a mouse in a box, and you are you living in your divine consciousness, you are you tuned in through your introspection, through your meditation, to the divine in you, to the universal, the world is your oyster. Everything that could be thought is thought in your mind, in your heart. And up to now, you haven't paid too much attention to it. But it's not too late. It's not too late. That glass of eternal life water is as wonderful whenever you drink it. If you drink it as you're dropping off to death, you will live eternally in that wonderful body. That body will be immediately restored to its original purity and integrity. If you are young and dynamic, your body will immediately move into your original purity and integrity, unlike what it experiences even as a young person. So, drink of this elixir of life. Drink of the eternal well, the fountain of eternal life. It's not just in Florida, but it's everywhere. It's within reach of every being on the face of the earth and in the universe. All you have to do is choose to take it and drink it and be wonderful. Where is thought located? It's everywhere. Where is your mind located? You think it's located in you, but it's located everywhere. So enjoy this wonderful adventure and have the time of your life, because you are the thought, you are the thinker, and you are all. I love you, I love you, I love you.